Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a full show for you today with two arts and culture interviews and one from music. The first interview is with writer Kira Harris over her book A Killian's Key. The second interview is with music group Atsuko Chiba for their new singles. The third interview is with Peter James of the La Chapelle Contemporaine series. 8 a.m. brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings Weather. And at 8:30, we'll listen to a podcast by In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, where this week's question is time travel possible? After some more music, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Just give me swimming in a sea of numbers, pushing me backwards and forwards. No, I know I don't know the answer. No, I know I don't. Baby got it back in the ocean, still shocked from the force of emotion. What were you thinking? Who you been talking to?
Numbers pushing me backwards and forwards. No, I know what. it's hard to escape this artificial sense of who I am. What we are is a grave mistake. Every day I breathe in the notion that the day is there to take, and that life is more than living just to die. There must be more than what meets the eye. Something underneath, more than a feeling, and words just can't describe. Seeing, making sense of what you're seeing, and there's more than meets the eye. Well, the ways are all around, and the motion keeps us moving. It's hard to settle down and take the time for being well. The ways are all around, and the motion keeps us moving. Go with the waves, break it down, break it down, break it down. Go with the waves. So break it down.
Throughout the pandemic, our kids have shown how strong, patient, and resilient they can be. But now, it's time for them to make memories again. With family and friends, with teammates, with peers. Vaccination against COVID-19 can help kids get back to being kids. Help protect your child and those around them. Book your child's vaccination when it's available to them. A message from the Government of Canada.
Bastien swore to himself that if he joined the stars that night, he would dedicate himself to watching over her. They reached Snib's quarters at the back of the ship, and the quartermaster opened the door for him. "Get in," he commanded. That is a quote of Achillean's Key, the latest novel out by Kira Harris. With us today, we have Kira, author of Achillean's Key. Hi, Kira, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be an author.
Yes, I'm Kira Harris, otherwise known as K.L. Harris, which is my author name. How did I become an author? Well, it was a bit of a long journey. I've always been a lover of stories, every kind of story medium, with theater, movies, games, definitely books, of course. And when I was a child, my mother was actually a writer, so I was introduced to writing at a young age, and I just thought it was the best thing because you could be anybody and go anywhere. And then I had a major detour in my life because I was introduced to acting, and I thought, oh my gosh, I can be in the stories, which to me was amazing. So I pursued acting for a really long time, both did heaps of theater and also film. Film was my kind of end game goal. And then when I was about 25, I realized that the scripts that I really wanted to be in and be doing were not accessible to me at the time. And I realized they might never be accessible to me. So I just stopped. All the joy went out of it for me. And I was actually kind of lost for a little while. And my husband was like, is there anything else that you've ever wanted to do? And I said, I've always wanted to write a book. And he said, well, go for it. But it took me a while to kind of figure that out. It was a time in my life where, because I'd pursued acting for so long, I was feeling a little lost. And it took me 7 years to write this book. And through that journey, I just realized that writing is really a huge part of who I actually am. And it's been wonderful. It's kind of been like finding myself. So yeah, that's how I became an author.
What is your education and past experience as an author?
My education from writing is pretty minimal, actually. I definitely had a creative writing class in high school, and I did minor in creative writing at university. But to be honest, the things that I've learned the most about stories and about writing did not come from any of my acting classes. They came from basically all of my other experience through story. Acting was a huge, huge part of that, for sure. I'm so grateful, actually, that I pursued acting for a really long time, because it's has so many wonderful things for writing. And also I dabbled in making film, and that gave me a huge insight into visual storytelling. And acting is so great with dialogue. And both theater and film actually had different things that were really helpful to the writing medium. For theater, for example, a lot of physicalization. You have to act with your whole body when you're translating to an audience that's far away. So it teaches you a lot about kind of emotional physicalization and communicating things through the body. And with film, it's so subtle. And when the camera's on you, it can see right into your eyes. And that really exposes your thoughts, which gives you a lot to play with as an actor, because you can play with dualities with what you're thinking and how that's different to, you know, what the character's saying. So I feel like my experience with all of that stuff and just traveling the world is really what prepared me to be a writer and was my best education as a writer.
As I was reading along, I noticed that the piece reads very much like a movie or television script with a bunch of director's notes in it. It's all sorts of description, but I could see it. It was like being in front of the television or in front of the movie screen and just watching this story unfold in front of me. It was really a beautiful experience. How were you inspired to write A Killian's Key?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, I don't really have a straight answer for that, because when I sat down to write this, I had no idea what book I was going to write or what it was going to be about, besides the fact it was going to have pirates in it, because I absolutely love pirates and I have for pretty much forever. But it ended up, because I didn't know what to write, I just ended up writing the book that I wanted to read. And it's a really personal story for me, because I've just pulled inspiration from everything in my life. I've kind of just started doing that on purpose. In the beginning, I didn't, but now I really enjoy finding ways to kind of plant in little things that were highlights for me throughout my life, or just things that have inspired me. I mean, of course, it's fiction, so there's a lot of fantasy. So all of the things that I've just loved as a child, or the things that I'm really drawn to, the character types, the different, I've melded together all the different genres that I love and was just like, I'm just going to put them all together. So that, for me, my inspiration has been so many things throughout my life, as well as books, film, games, traveling, all kinds of things. But yeah, it's a very personal story to me.
What is the story you were telling in A Killian's Key?
Yeah, so Aquilian's Key is an adventure story, and it's very much a coming-of-age story as well. It's a start of a 7-part series, so I wanted to kind of give the characters origin stories. I wanted to be able to, you know, really be truthful to the age that they are. They're teenagers, and kind of tell the story of what it's like to be that age and coming of age and the things that, you know, you worry about at that age and the things that you find fun and funny and, you know, your view of the world and how the things that you want to do is based off of, you know, having such little knowledge of what the world actually is. And so I just wanted to kind of be able to bask in the joy of that and really play in the moment of these characters kind of being that age and at home where they grew up before casting them into a wild world that will alter them throughout the series.
Will you please read us 4 minutes of passages from your book?
Yeah, definitely. As soon as they finished their bowls of stew, Cricket jumped up on the table to make a speech. "Oi, scallywags, lend me your ears," he called loudly, and the men's voices quieted as they gave him their attention. "Tonight your blackjacks will be filled with gulpers or Doc's finest brew, and you have one man to thank for it, for he has single-handedly rid our trials with that wretched star-forsaken box. Give a warm welcome to the Master of Locks, the Dodger of Death, our thief, and the newest member of our crew, Dodger." Oh, shick, Bastion thought. Cricket pulled him up on the table beside him, and the men erupted in cheer. After a minute, Cricket quieted them again. "Dodger era has never been beyond West Dock shores. I think it'd only be proper to introduce the lad to what he has been missing. What do you say, lads? Shall we start by showing him how we welcome new recruits to the Black Mary?" The crew cheered again loudly, banging their spoons on the tables and lifting their blackjacks high. "Aye, initiation!" men called out around him. Then they began hitting their blackjacks on the tables in unison and chanting his name. "Dodger! Dodger! Dodger!" Bastion had a bad feeling about what might happen next. A tall, lanky pirate with dark red hair and a freckled face jumped up on the table beside them and used a jug to refill the blackjack in Bastion's hand. "This be the good stuff," he said to Bastion with a wink. "Dodger, Stork, Stork, Dodger," Cricket introduced. "Welcome aboard the Black Mary," Stork said. Then he pulled out a metal shot glass with a flexible target attached to the top and held it up to the enthusiastic crowd. From a small pouch, he poured something into it that looked like black sand. "What's that?" Bastion asked. "Black powder," Stork returned cheerfully. "No, no, no," Bastion said, and he tried to get down from the table, but he was pulled back up by the two pirates. "You're not a coward, are you, Dodger?" Stork asked. Bastion shook his head uneasily. "Didn't think so. Now stand real still," he instructed. Bastion swallowed his fear and stood as still as a statue while Stork proceeded to balance the shot glass on the top of his head. "Don't worry, it's not going to kill you," Cricket consoled. "Stork here knows what he'd be doing, don't you, Stork?" he asked the redhead. "Of course, matey. Ain't this a face you can trust?" Stork asked, grinning at Bastion. The men cheered as soon as the shot glass was balanced in place. Cricket turned to the men behind them. "Bullseye, at the ready," he called. Bastion carefully turned his head. There was a tall man with a tattooed target on his forehead who was holding a bottle of rum in one hand and a pistol in the other. "Aye, at the ready," Bullseye said and cocked his pistol, pointing it at Bastion's head. Bastion's eyes widened and Stork and Cricket turned him back around. "The only danger being moving, stand still as a statue, mate, and you have nothing to fear," Cricket advised. Bastion tensed. He could feel the pistol aimed at the back of his head. Stork jumped off the table and Cricket stepped aside. "Aim!" Bastion's stomach dropped. He closed his eyes. The shot glass stood balanced on his head and the full blackjack shook in his hands. "Dodger! Dodger! Dodger!" the men's voices echoed around him. Bastion prayed to the stars. "Fire!" The gun made an ear-splitting roar as the lead left the barrel. The ball made its way skillfully to the flexible target on Bastion's head and brushed a circle of flint on the bullseye. The target bent forward, dipping the sparking flint into the metal shot glass and igniting the powder. Sparks flew around Bastion's head as the flaming shot glass fell forward into the blackjack in his hands. The potent spirit instantly caught fire. Cricket came up beside him and put his blackjack over Bastion's, extinguishing the flame. The men cheered loudly and then began a new chant. Skull, skull, skull. Bastion was stunned. He stood staring at the bullet that had lodged itself in the wood beam in front of him. Drink up, mate. Cricket grinned. Bastion took a deep breath and knocked back his stein. Despite the harsh burning sensation in his throat, he welcomed the stiff drink. The men cheered him on, and once he'd finished, he turned his stein upside down and put it on his head in triumph. The room erupted in a roar of approval. As if on cue, an upbeat sea chanty filled the air, and the sailors pushed the tables aside. Cricket helped Bastion down and clapped him on the shoulder. "Welcome to the Black Mary, mate," he said cheerfully. Bastion's head was swimming. He noticed that the music was being played by a half-man on the fiddle. "That be Dagger. Don't let his stature fool ya. You might be small, but ye be deadly," Cricket said. Bastion had heard of the short men from Dragoon, an island on the southern sea, but he'd never actually seen one. The man played the instrument with skilled vigor and sang in tune as the sailors began to dance around him. Bastion's surroundings blurred as the liquor took hold, and the next thing he knew, he was being pulled out onto the dance floor to join them.
So thank you very much for those beautiful passages.
No worries. My pleasure.
What are the names of the characters and why were these selected?
My main characters are Bastion, Felix, and Gwenna. Gwenna I chose because it's actually the name of my imaginary friend when I was a child. And so that's why I put her name in there. And then Felix came from was really just inspired when ever since I've been a kid, I've kept a log of names in my journal because I just, whenever I came across cool names, I was like, oh, that's a great character name, kind of log them. And Felix is one of those names I've just always loved. I got introduced to it because my dad's a big fan of Felix the Cat. And I remember hearing somebody talk about naming their boat Felix and saying in something it means taking flight. And I always thought that was awesome. So Felix kind of just came from that. And then Bastion, I always loved the name Sebastian and, you know, I thought it was very nautical, but it's also kind of a very common name for anything sea related, you know, Little Mermaid and all that. But I met somebody named Bastion. I was like, ah, that's such a cool twist. So that's where I kind of got that from. And then have since discovered that it's actually a pretty common name used in fantasy. I still love it. So yeah, I mean, my names all throughout the books, most of the time, if it's not the core characters, I kind of just pull them from what feels right for the type of person they are. And some of them I just pretty much just make them up on the spot of kind of whatever comes to mind. Some of them are ones that I've held on to from collecting in various places. And then sometimes I go searching for names, just actually working on book two today, which I'm finishing up at the moment. I was looking through a lot of old English names because I wanted to find names that were very fitting to the upper class and kind of that time period. So yeah, I kind of hunt for names, I suppose, in all different types of ways.
What is the theme of the Aquilian's Key and how does it intersect societal issues?
Yeah, the theme of Aquilian's Key is very much adventure and coming of age, as I've mentioned before. And yeah, it definitely intersects societal issues for sure. I feel like fiction is an excellent vehicle for truth. And I try and pull kind of as much from our world as I can to kind of put into my books. I think it's a wonderful way, especially fiction, it's a wonderful way to kind of show truth in a different light or from a different perspective that allows people to kind of see it in a way that they've never seen it before. And sometimes that kind of shines a light on it. You know, we don't see otherwise because it's when it's all around us, sometimes we're actually blinded from the things that we're closest to. So yeah, I think it's fun to just kind of throw that in from a different place and perspective.
If our listeners want more information on Aquilian's Key or UKL Harris or to buy your book, where should they go?
Yeah, so the best place to go is on my website. You can find the book pretty much anywhere online. If you Google it, the spelling is Equilians. Do you need it? Hopefully you got that. E-Q-U-I-L-L-I-A-N-S. But if you go to my website, which is Master of Make Believe, www.masterofmakebelieve.com. There's portals to be able to get the book from all kinds of places. Amazon is probably the easiest way to find it. You can get it on audio as well as an ebook as well as a printed book.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a really big joy, and I'm so happy that you enjoyed the book.
You have been listening to Kira Harris speaking about her book, Aquilian's Key. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun.
Doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Montreal's Atsuko Chiba fearlessly crosses genre-defining borders with a cohesive and hypnotic blend of progressive rock, psychedelic rock, post-rock, and krautrock. Their sound is a reconciliation of extremes equally informed by the fringes of musical exploration as well as the popular music of past and present. With us today, we have Kevin and Eric of Atsuko Chiba. Hi, Kevin and Eric, and welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hello.
First, please introduce yourselves and tell us how you came to be involved in Atsuko Chiba.
My name is Eric. I play guitars and keys in Atsuko Chiba, and basically I'm one of the founders of this band, playing with this band for about 10 years now.
And I'm Kevin. I also play guitar and keys. And well, actually, it's all the founding members that are still in the band. We've been doing this for 10 years now.
What is your history as musicians, and what have you recorded in the past?
Basically, we all played in bands before this band. Some bands like together, like I played in the band with Kevin and Dave. Our other members, Anthony and Karim, played in the band together as well. And basically, as Atsuko Chiba, we've been together for about 10 years. And we've recorded two LPs, we have two EPs, we have a few singles, and we have a few live sessions as well.
Who are your bandmates, and what do you all play or do?
The other band members are Anthony Piazza, who plays drums. He also takes care of all the visuals on stage. So when we play live, we have projections going on, and he's the one who organizes all of that. Karim Lakdar, who plays guitars and keys like me and Eric, but also sings. And then we have David Palumbo, who plays bass, and he also sings as well. And then there's me and Eric.
Who just do guitar and keys, essentially.
Yeah.
What is the story behind your latest double single release?
Basically, Quick Infant Guilt was written with a batch of other songs that we're writing for our new LP that's going to be released next year. And essentially, this track was a little different from the other ones in terms of vibe and feeling from the other songs that were written for the album. So we decided to just pull it out and experiment further with it and release it as a single, essentially.
May we hear some of your music?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
This is Quick Infant Guilt on the Wednesday Morning After.
ominous mass attacks wrapped in plastic. Hazardous wraps are capped with material access. Fabrics can't degrade, can't negate the tactics. Arrange the facts, do whatever pays the hand, and do whatever blame a random pace to blow up. Set the trace, dissolve, replace, recreate. Feeds the life, feeds the strife. Pay the pipe what they need, and twice the need in life. Something I really oughta know. Shit, I really gotta go. Pick up life, pity self, forget it, get it. I'm on spend it, maybe caught up in the city. Busy, busy, blending, and I thought that I thought this was bigger than this. This could not be true, but I got up in the middle, simply moving things a little. Really doing things for real, but am I living? Am I ego? Am I tripping? Am I in the clouds? Isn't this the sequel?
Resourceful, hold it, it's forceful. Had you started 20 years ago, we wouldn't go through the bombing, the storms, eruption. It's on, displaced in the moment. Crack the token, broken, hoping for the thread. The minimage, I conjure up what's left. Just ain't enough to cover up, so cut it up. Put it aside, enough's enough. This toxic feed is just a dud. Simplistic spam, mean mug. Fisher Price, plastic rant. They clap their hands as we collapse. The shares follow the pulse. See that it's irregular. Point to point to swing like the pendulum. Read like the rest of them. Quick was that infant guilt. Spine killer with that instant filth.
Process when you write and produce a song?
Our process changes, I'd say, every time we approach writing a new song or a new album. What's interesting about this song, like Eric said, it stood out. A bunch of songs that we wrote for one of our records, so we wanted to do something maybe a little unique with it. And this song had many lives coming into it, and we basically approached it very differently, essentially using the computer as our main instrument. So we would do a lot of recordings and then sort of process those recordings and arrange them on the computer, which was kind of unique for us because we normally will like sit in a room and sort of hash out parts together, which we did a little bit. But for the most part, we found our through line with this song, just piecing it together, piecemeal on the computer. And then once we did that, the second song that in the maxi single sort of happened very quickly because we were in a flow of process. And so that's basically the way we approach these two songs. But like I said, it changes every time.
Who are your producers and where did you produce this latest project?
Yeah, we basically produce ourselves, essentially.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we also work with one of our collaborators, Matthew Sarantola, who's our sound engineer. So we worked with him as well, producing a song, and it was done at our own studio, Room 11, basically where we record all of our music and write as well.
May we listen to some more of your music?
Yes.
This is It's Over, Right? On CKUT.
I think you get enough. I think you get enough. I think you get enough.
mistakes. And I'll be pulling all the stops when the shot clock clock. Yes, it's awful, let's get it on. As the micro feeds this mass machine, carbon tides scab, manufacture spread this glimpse of dreams, bleed. It's tantrum feeds, it's grip that keeps it tight. It's lean, hovers like a wish made through the night. And I grow soft when the killing was the kids, was the will, was the spirit. Oh, shit, did you get it up?
If our listeners want more information or to buy your music, where should they go?
Best place would be on our Bandcamp. So at sukuchiba.bandcamp.com. You could also find some of our stuff if you want to just listen on, you know, all the streaming platforms like Spotify and all that. Another place to buy the music would be on our Bin and Labels website, which would be mockland.bandcamp.com.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Kevin and Eric of Atsuko Chiba speaking about the release of their latest double single. I'm your host, Sheila Ferrando.
It takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Nearly 25 shows will be presented during the 2021 to 2022 season, bringing together more than 150 artists and accomplices, designers, performers, etc., mostly from Montreal, but also from Quebec, Rouyn-Noranda, Toronto, Calgary, Paris, and London. All disciplines will be represented: dance, theater, music, circus, performance, all part of the La Chapelle Contemporaine series. With us today, we have Peter James of Exorcisme Redemption Extatique. Hi, Peter, and welcome to the show.
Hello.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved with the La Chapelle Contemporaine series.
My place in the community of live art in Montreal, I think, is a radical place in art because I'm not afraid to do what I think I should do on stage. Every time I do a show, I try to free myself from my own self, you know. It's a question of survival for me. Because of that, I worked with many different people, intergenerational, and I worked with Dana Michel, I worked with Nicolas Quentin, I worked with Geneviève et Mathieu, I worked with a lot of people, and Manuel Roque, and etc. And that's my place. For the Contemporain, for the La Chapelle Theatre relationship I have with them, it's because it's the only theatre in Montreal that would ever take someone like me, for one thing. The only theatre where it's not just about spoken theatre, you know, traditional theatre. It's about interdisciplinary. It's performance, as you just said. And that's a very important place in the city. Very, very important. We only have one like that. And it's a laboratoire de recherche. It's a work in progress place. And it's great. That's, I don't know, for all the cities of North America, we need places like that, you know? And that's that. And my relationship with La Chapelle is it's a love and hate relationship, because they love me, but they're afraid of me. I love them and I get on their nerves, but they are super important.
What is your experience in education as an actor?
You mean my background?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I've started I'm a kid. I'm from foster families. You know, I'm from a sous-proletarian family. I was lost. And when I got to Montreal, people kept telling me, you should go in art, blah, blah, blah. So I tried something. I said, I'm going to try this, you know, and I tried the mime school, Omnibus Mime School. And once I was there, I met a lot of people in dance then. And they said to me, you have to come with us. You have to work with us. And it's never stopped since. So I owe a lot to Danse Contemporaine, Danse, because they put me on the map. And ever since, I'm telling you, I've never stopped. And I did theater. I didn't really like it because it's text for text. And I thought it was more conventional. So I went to dance. I went to Japanese Buto. And then I started to do performance art on my own. That's pretty much the topo.
You do a 5-hour solo performance during the La Chapelle Contemporaine series. What is the story you tell?
Oh, yeah, but it's not a solo. It's me with 7 other people, including Catherine Tardif, the choreographe, metteur en scène, including Peter Jashko, who is a dancer, a real virtuoso dancer, but he's not going to dance. And there's circus boys there, but they do performance art now. And Eric Dorion, who is a music compositeur de musique actuelle. And he does a lot of noise music. And I love that because it creates a lot of tension and it creates a lot of chaos. So we're going to be, yeah. So it's a solo, but with people. So there's a group there. So it's not just me, actually.
How do you feel about the younger generation's willingness to take risks for their art?
Good question. Right now, you know, with all this contemporary art, pretty tendons all over the planet, from Berlin, Bruxelles, Montreal, New York. There's things that I like about what we're going through right now, for one thing, because they're taking chances. They're trying different paradigma, different codes and signs for the art. And that comes from the plastic art, actually. And I love that for that reason. But I don't like everything, every proposition they do. But I appreciate this moment of a bit of chaos in the art world right now. There's a lot of older people don't understand the new way people do art. And I like that confrontation. I really, really, really like it. And I work with a lot of them, actually. So I think there's good in there, you know, because every 15 years or so, there's like an experimental scene that comes back up and it bothers everybody else. And then it's going to smooth down and maybe we'll come back to more classic art. You know, Pina Bausch was an example. When she appeared, it was a huge scandal for the dance community. You know, they didn't like her at the beginning, and then she became a superstar. And then she slowly but surely she left. But I mean, she produced and provoked a lot of things in theater, dance and performance.
I heard that the posters for the series on Mount Royal were ransacked. How do you feel about that kind of disrespect?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was for the show that's happening now. I think it's finished. Yeah, well, you know, there's all those political signs right now because we're going to go into elections. There's all the federal city elections and provincial elections that are going to come too. And all those pictures are... How do you say that? They're being pirated, you know, like that. I think there's always those people who will always do things like that to photo, to pictures, you know, and it's terrible, but it's like that. It's like graffitis. It's the human condition is terrible, you know. I mean, right now in this era of our time, we don't even know if our species is going to survive. And look at the human reaction to things, because they fear that makes them do all those stupid things, you know what I'm saying? And that's too bad, but it's there. It's always been there. It's always going to be there. That's why we have to keep up in communities, preserve ourselves from hate. You know what I'm saying?
You are performing with a selection of other skilled performers. Who else performs the show with you again? And helps bring, and who helps you bring it to the stage?
Oh, who helped me? Anyways, the people who are there are people that I really, really like. I care for them because they are like me. They stand by themselves, for themselves, as strong individual. They are, of course, and they have an integrity. And they are looking for some kind of honesty or authenticity. And that's why I chose them, because I know they can assume to be on stage with me, and they dig it. They are just like me. They are a bit afraid of what's going to happen. It's shaky, it's blurry, but they like that danger, that risk. They are willing to take that risk to be on stage with that for that anti-show. Catherine Tardif, again, I mean, she's in the 50s, in her 50s. I'm in my 60s. There's people in the 40s, like Peter Jashko is in his 30s. The three young guys are in their 20s. Eric Dorion, the musical composer, is in his 40s. So those people are all willing to live something like that, to give that to the public, to give doubt, uncertainty, to be shaky and to be alive. So they are all very important. Like the three guys that are 24 years old, Basile, Herman Philippe, Tristan Robquin, and Maxime Blériot, are from the circus world, but they don't do circus anymore, but because they want to do something larger than that, which is art performing, you know. So yeah, that's what they are.
Where and when is your performance to take place, and what do tickets cost?
Okay. It's at La Chapelle, and it's the 24th and 25th of September. And don't forget, it's from 7 p.m. to 1 a.m. If you want to live an odyssey, something very long but unique, come to see it. And it's going to be, it's going to be the 24th, it's going to be $15 for 1 hour show, for the show. And then every other hour you pay $5 more. And it's the 25th, the Saturday, it's going to be $20 and $5 from each more hour you want to stay.
If our listeners want some more information, where should they go?
Well, go on the page, La Chapelle page, just get the Google and get La Chapelle and ask, you'll see it's all there.
Thank you for your interview today.
You're welcome, Sheila Ferrando.
You have been listening to Peter James speaking about his latest performance at La Chapelle Contemporary Series. I'm your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Pop Montreal International Music Festival is celebrating its 20th anniversary from September 22nd to 26th, 2021. 5 days of music, films, art, crafts, panels, and more, featuring Cakes Tequila, Backwash, The Besnard Lakes, The Deers, Handsome Eli, and more. Tickets on sale now at popmontreal.com.
You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, and sound by Matthew Jackson on Radio CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal, or online at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Del Rio, Texas, photographs and video footage of Border Patrol agents on horseback chasing, grabbing, and whipping Haitian asylum seekers have sparked widespread condemnation. One border agent was heard screaming obscenities at asylum seekers, including children, after they attempted to return to a makeshift camp where thousands have been staying underneath a bridge for days.
Hey, you use your women? This is why your country because you use your women for this.
White House officials said they will investigate the violent attacks. Meanwhile, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas traveled Monday to the makeshift camp in Del Rio, where he once again warned asylum seekers not to come to the United States.
Only Haitians living in the United States before July 29th are eligible for temporary protected status. If you come to the United States illegally, you will be returned. Your journey will not succeed, and you will be endangering your life and your family's lives.
Driven by hunger, hundreds of Haitian refugees cross back into Mexico and return to the U.S. makeshift camp carrying food. This is a Haitian asylum seeker who says he and his two children went without food for 4 days.
People in the United States don't give us anything, just water. Since children only receive water, children are going hungry. We are out in the open. The United States government has no conscience.
Advocates say